The University of Miami Law School Entertainment Arts and Sports Law Program presents the Leadership Game Plan. I'm Executive Producer and Program Director Greg Levy, and now over to our host, longtime NFL coordinator, head coach, three-time Grey Cup champion, NCAA champion with the Miami Hurricanes, Miami Law graduate, and now adjunct faculty member, coach Mark Tressman.
I believe that everyone can lead, no matter who you are or what you do. I believe just like quarterbacks, leaders are not born, they are developed. With so many platforms to speak our minds, there are countless ways to lead and impact the lives of others. So how we lead in this accelerating and interconnected world will determine our present and our future. That's why leadership today matters more than ever. Welcome to the Leadership Game Plan, where we go beyond the X's and O's through the unique lens of our accomplished guests. I'm your host, Mark Tressman, and let's get started. Authenticity is an essential quality of all good leaders. Remaining true to who you are makes you a stronger leader, a trustworthy leader. And through vulnerability, you can create a more welcoming work environment. Christine Simmons has been committed to living unapologetically and helping to uplift others, allowing her to be a phenomenal leader as she continues to make significant strides in the pursuit of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace. Christine defines living unapologetically as being bold, attacking life's challenges in extraordinary fashion, and loving oneself, flaws and all. She has been intentional about showing up to her leadership roles with this ideology in mind. She speaks globally on a variety of topics such as business, strategy, leadership, and inclusion. Christine has had over two decades worth of leadership experience working with many Fortune 500 corporations. In 2019, Christine became the first woman and Black person to hold the position of Chief Operating Officer at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science. In this role, she created the first ever Office of Representation, Inclusion, and Equity, which supported internal and external initiatives to broaden the aperture through which excellence is recognized in film. Prior to her role at the Academy, Christine was the president and chief operating officer of the three-time WNBA champion, Los Angeles Sparks. In this role, she spearheaded ticketing, sponsorship, sales and service, marketing, community relations, communications, and game operations. During her time at the Sparks, ticket sales increased dramatically, but most importantly, her work and dedication was able to impact the LA community through community programming. The story of Christine Simmons should serve as an inspiration to all of us, and life lessons by that remaining true to who you are can make you a better leader and is a game changer for achieving and maintaining long-term service. We're excited to get into this conversation, so please welcome Christine Simmons to the Leadership Game Plan Podcast.
Christine Simmons, we are so excited and jacked up to have you with us. You have taken the time out of your busy schedule to fly across country last night.
I did.
Arriving here at 7 o'clock this morning, a.m. Yes. Miami time, Eastern time, and gracing us with your presence today. So our audience already knows a lot about you and your background. So this is a leadership podcast. It's a game plan for leadership in the law. So let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
Tell us about your as a leader, your definition of leadership, and what does it look like from your point of view to be a leader?
Well, first and foremost, thank you guys for having me. I love it here. I love the students that are here. They're all rock stars. I constantly feel like I'm slacking in life every time I come to see these amazing students and excited. For me, they are what leadership is about, right? And what we're here doing, I think it is, you know, the paths that we have had the honor of paving the trails that we have had the honor of blazing, as hard as they may have come, to be able to create one that's easier for them, to leave something better than it was. For me, leadership also means oftentimes having to make those hard decisions. Hopefully they're not all hard decisions, right? But you have to stand in the core of who you are. And so really true leadership is not about you as the individual. It's about the impact you make, right? It's about the people that you can lift up. My actual quote that I used to tell my team all the time is, my job is to block, tackle, and get out of the way so you can shine. And I think as you get into these higher levels where you can create platforms, you can block and tackle, you can create a safe space for them to take risks and to shine. I think that to me is some of the true aspects. There are so many tentacles of leadership, and I know that we're going to talk a lot about them today. But for me, at the core of everything, it is lifting others up so that way we can all make an impact and leave things better than they were.
Yeah, that's exactly how we start our classes. Leadership isn't about us. It's about them. It's about the people we inspire. And I think that's the hardest part for new leaders to understand. It's not about them and their title, their position,
right.
Their salary.
Yeah.
It's about what they can do for others and lifting other people up.
So, and I'll also say this too, Mark, is that it's this bigger picture, right? So when you're in one job role, and as you're coming up in your career, sometimes all you can see is your task at hand, your job at hand, your goals, right? And then you go to the next, and then you go to the next level, and then you have multiple jobs and multiple tasks and multiple things that you have to balance. And sometimes they all don't necessarily coincide with the other. Sometimes they're in conflict. Ideally, they're not, and they're complementary. And then as you continue to grow and you get more and more scope within your leadership role, now it gets even more complicated because you have this huge picture that you have to see and multiple people that will be impacted by it. And oftentimes young leaders, because I believe everybody is a leader at every stage, it doesn't matter what your title is. Every leader has the opportunity to look at things in that way. And you don't have to wait till you get a title that happens to have a C in front of it, right, or any other title for that matter, in order to be able to see that bigger picture and to see that broader impact. So whether it is a broader impact within your job, or as we all like to talk about, a broader impact in humanity, really, I think then that's really what defines a leader. It's not defined by a title.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. In our first class, we give every student the opportunity to tell their leadership story. You know, because before you can lead others, you have to really learn how to lead yourself and who you are. Oof. And we use the term narrative to describe your leader, each person in our class's leadership story.
Yeah,
so we're excited to hear a little bit about your leadership story, a little bit about who influenced you over a lifetime. Who are the people, coaches, influencers, maybe coincidences or situations that have happened in your life that have brought you to this moment to share with us, to get us better.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. There's been so many, and I was joking with you both before, like I kind of feel like this is an episode of This Is Your Life. I'm not that old yet, although I was blessed to just turn 48 in December. But that being said, you know, there's those everyday leaders for me, first and foremost. Of course, there's the amazing icons that I've had the honor and privilege to work with. Magic Johnson, of course, is one. Irvin is ridiculously competitive. He is ridiculously gracious. But back to the competitive, I'll never forget when we did win our championship, we're on the floor and we had just won, literally confetti's coming down, and he looks at me and he's like, "You ready to do it again next year?" And I'm like, "I mean, yeah, but can I get some champagne in my hair first? Like, come on." But that's who he is. Right. And it's this relentless pursuit of excellence. And that's one of the things that I think I took most away from him. One of my leaders at Disney, whom I'm still dearest best friends with now, and I'm on the advisory board for her company, she taught me about being meticulous, and that we used to have to do decks and decks of data. And literally our senior leader would flip through it, and if he found one rounding error, the whole thing would just be set aside, right? And we're analyzing the spend of the entire company. So we're talking about hundreds and millions of dollars. And so understanding the importance of every detail is what Dylan Ano took or gave to me, I should say. But there's things I take from every single person. And when you talk about the narrative of one, and what you said resonated so much, because that leading yourself and your own narrative makes you, and especially those of us that have come from historically underutilized communities and marginalized communities, whom have had to somewhat dim our light or change or adjust or conform for whatever reason, you know, it's challenging to stay strong and centered in who you are and what you believe in, because oftentimes you're in these structures that weren't necessarily built for that, right? And so as I look at Greg wearing my unapologetically hoodie, right, that is a constant reminder for me. And then where it can inspire others to remain true to yourself, to be unapologetically whomever you are, right? If it's whether or not you're unapologetically optimistic, right, and idealistic, whether you're unapologetically Black, whether you're unapologetically female, whether you're unapologetically a football, you know, hero, be that and be true to it. And the more you stand true and you're centered in that space, the more you're able to give, right? Because typically those whom can't give and hoard power and are insecure, right? Those are the ones that sometimes cause a little bit more challenges. But when you're centered, I can empower you. I can lift you up. I can lift her up. I can lift Chris back there up, and everybody will shine. And I'm still just as powerful as I've ever been and centered in who I am. And so the challenge is, so many times, a lot of these organizations and society and just in general want us to conform. And they want us to say, oh, but this is the formula that works. We hear that all the time. We hear it in sports. We hear it in entertainment. We hear it in corporate. This works. Well, it hasn't necessarily worked all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're unapologetically in your space, in your narrative, in your truth, and as cliche as it sounds, it really does allow you to take more risks and empower other people even more so. And so that is what I have continued to evolve and build on, so that I too can be a better leader for others.
So you talked about already, leadership is about the people, right? Yeah. It's not about you, it's about the people. What are the characteristics or the things you learned from your narrative that apply to the people?
Yeah, it's important. We were talking about listening, right? That we are truly listening. We're listening to learn. We're listening to not to respond and not to react. We are listening to understand that person and their experience, right? So that they feel seen. So for a lot of our younger leaders these days, the system hasn't worked for them. And so we've seen that they're ready to blow up the system, right? And I mean, honestly, you know, you can't be totally mad at them, because sometimes the system has been broken. And so that being said, if they are in these bigger organizations where blowing up the system might not necessarily be the tomorrow answer, how do we make sure that they feel heard, that they feel seen truly, that they feel safe? We talked about safety, right? Because if they feel safe to truly shine, to truly bring what they have to the table, which is unique, which then will help that company or that organization be more creative, go to market quicker, right? Get the solution quicker, or in a different way, in a more unique way, that all then drives profitability for that organization potentially, right? That's all a benefit to all of us, but they have to feel safe in that space to be able to do that.
And how do you make them feel safe as their leader?
Yeah, one, it's modeling it yourself. Right. And so you too have to model what it means to be bold. Right. But you also have to let them know that they can mess up. I'd rather they can say, I don't know. I love it when someone comes to me and says, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. That is my favorite, because then the innovation comes. Right. Because if you're constantly following the blueprint, then you're always going to get to that same outcome. Right. But if you really don't know, that's actually where the magic happens, because then you go try this and you go try that, and then you come up with something so crazy and new and mind-blowing that the world has never seen it before. But if that person didn't feel safe in doing so, and if that experiment didn't work out and they were like, oh no, that's my job, right? Then the organization would never benefit from that brilliance and from that lived experience. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make sure that they feel safe, that you two are modeling, that you yourself as a leader are modeling what it is that you're looking to do. And then from there, feed the creativity. Make sure that you keep them focused on what the objectives are and what the goals are. But I'm all about, in fact, I wrote an article about, like, we look at triple threats in every other industry, like a fantastic thing. There's EGOTs, right? It's fantastic. It's an amazing accomplishment. But when it comes to our business world, sometimes we're like, nope, stay in your lane. Stay focused on this task at hand. Don't do this. Don't do that. Right. And in this age of storytelling, storytelling is the most compelling thing in any industry and in any job. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so if we are mm-hmm. utilizing storytelling, that means mm-hmm. we have to have stories to tell. We have to have people to talk about, right? Whether they are lawyers or whether they are boring business people. Mm-hmm. We're not boring, right? How do you do that in a compelling way? How do you take every single one of their talents and not be threatened by it and realize that it's a value add to the company? And so those are the types of things that I think that you can do to really make them feel seen and heard. And then also finally, what I'll say is, we all have access to so much information right now. So when it used to be the practice, and we were talking about when we were coming, when in our day, like when, when old people really say old stuff, right? Back in our day. But when we were coming up, people would keep information close to the vest, right? And you'd only get this much information. And while sometimes there are some confidential matters that you can't necessarily share, right? That being said, the more context you can give folks to the bigger picture, and how this, even though this thing that's way over here may not be in their job description, this aspect of their job is going to affect this over there. So if you give them more context, it makes them more informed and it makes them do their job better. Mm-hmm. And thus they feel heard. So then you can actually say, I hear you. That's actually a really great idea. I try to stay away from, we tried that, it didn't work, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the full picture, mm-hmm. right? And let me paint this picture. And this is the path we went down and why we can't do it, why we just determined we couldn't do X, Y, and Z. And then ultimately, they feel a little bit more comfortable mm-hmm. that at least you heard them, that their thoughts have been considered, mm-hmm. and they've maybe learned right. a little bit more about the business along the way.
Mm-hmm. I want to hit on two things because I don't want to have gone over it without mentioning this. Leaders are learners. I think that's really big that yes. if you want to lead, you have to be relentless in wanting to learn and to grow and to read and to listen
yes.
and to grow. And then the other thing that you hit on a larger scale is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And your storytelling really comes from your narrative.
Yeah.
If you spend the time to go through your leadership story, you will find the stories within your narrative to be able to share with others and change.
It's so true. And yeah. that's how, like, real world examples, right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about how the exercises that the cohorts will be doing in the class, those are the most impactful because yeah. it's a real world application of the law, a real world application of leadership, a yeah. real world application of inclusion and representation and how that manifests in the day to day. We can study it, but until you have the actual real world aspect of it, then that in itself is such a great teacher. But one of my favorite phrases, and you hit it right on the nose, is relentlessly reinvent yourself. And I've done it over and over again in my career,
yeah.
as you can see by I graduated with a physiological science degree. I was pre-med. So when we talk about relentlessly reinventing yourself, here I am today. And to your point, it's because I am constantly learning.
Yeah. Before I turn this conversation over to my producer, Greg Levy, who's with us today. and I'll already late in letting everybody know that he's with us today, because I know you have, you've spent some time together, and Greg knows you better than I do. So I wanted him to be here today. Is there anybody else that you think of? You mentioned the magic, and speaking of magic, yeah. Magic Johnson,
yeah.
You had a trust business relationship with him.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how that trust was created between sure. the two of you and the elements on both sides of it?
Yeah.
Because, we know that the most important aspect of any relationship, business, personal, is going to be the cornerstone of trust. And yes. we talk a lot about vulnerability-based trust as opposed to competency-based trust.
Yeah.
Two people like you and Magic have the competency, but where does the vulnerability come in, and how was the trust built?
Sure. And when I was bold enough to introduce myself to Irvin, I was just out of college. So I was nowhere near the whole competency thing. I was this, so funny, he describes it as this, my hair was, I was wearing it and it's naturally curly state at the time. And he remembers this curly haired girl coming up to him and asking him, you know, for a sit down, if you will. So basically, there's these legendary runs at UCLA in the off season and all the pro players come and would play pickup ball at men's gym. Well, the beautiful thing, it was called men's gym now, again, dating myself, they call it the Student Activity Center now at UCLA. But that being said, the other beautiful thing about this building is that it houses these fantastic student run programs, whether they're out in the community. And there, I know I participated in like African Brothers and Sisters, where we would go and mentor kids in Watts, in a housing project in Watts, or we would go do hypertension screenings on Crenshaw Boulevard. And so that was housed here. And then also a peer counseling program that was student run, student initiated as well for each of these different communities too. So at the time I had graduated and I was running the peer counseling program for the African American students on campus. And the quickest way, because I was running late, was through the court. Well, as a woman walking through the basketball courts, it's not always a fun experience. We'll just say that. But as I was rushing to get to work, I was like, oh, that's Irvin. And he had just opened his nonprofit health centers, or I was looking to open mine, and he had just opened all his AIDS clinics across the country. So I wanted to pick his brain. Because again, I was pre-med. My goal had been to do a joint MD-MBA and open these nonprofit health centers across the country for the underinsured and uninsured populations. Because so many of our communities are using ERs mm-hmm. as primary care. And so I approached him. This was also the time when it was really kind of this heightened period of when a lot of our NBA athletes were unfortunately losing their money. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of national news. And so when I approached him and we started talking about the clinics, and then we started talking about this desire to make sure that athletes are student athletes, especially, but then athletes in general are transitioning well and have opportunities on how they one create and preserve their generational wealth. And then how they continue to build their empires, as he obviously is a blueprint of doing so. So to your point about trust, so that was early on, right? So I'm very, very young. And LA is a small place. We run into each other all the time. But never once did I call and be like, hey, can I get those Laker tickets? You know, hey, back then, again, I'm going to date myself.
Plus you were late.
You didn't get off on the right track.
That's true. Well, he didn't know I was late to work. But that being said, Midsummer Night's Magic was like this big weekend in LA. But I was never asking, if anything, and you know, for these types of scenarios, there's not much that you can give an Irvin Magic Johnson when you're in my position. But what I could give him was respect and honor his legacy in whatever way I could. And then whenever I had the opportunity to be able to try to give him something, then I did, before I ever even thought about an ask. And that manifested in an opportunity when I was working in supplier diversity at Disney, and the RFP for food service and facilities maintenance came up. And so one of my goals was to increase our spend with African-American businesses. And he had a company that did food service and facilities maintenance. So I made sure he got the opportunity to bid, and he won. And so me being able to give him an opportunity, which also was very beneficial for the company as well for my personal career goals, then that's when he came and recruited me. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's nurturing an authentic relationship and mm-hmm. never really ask until you know exactly what it is and you know that it'll be mutually beneficial. So my first ask was really for him to come and meet my bosses, right? So it was really more beneficial, probably it was mutually beneficial for both of us, but at the same time, he would have gotten a really good opportunity out of it. And so you have to be very, very selective about how, what you ask and when you ask it. And so strategic, but not in a maniacal way, but in a truly authentic way, because you really want to build a professional relationship with that human, regardless of their status or whatever they may be. And so I really try to do that. It gets tough sometimes when there's so many people. So I try to be that for other people that approach me as much as I can. But nonetheless, you know, it's just the authenticity, you know, and then the action, right? Yeah. So we were saying it has to be not just words, but actions. Your actions will always speak louder. And always, and I would say the last point is, trying to constantly lift up somebody's name for opportunity, even when they're not in the room. Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about trust.
over the last few years, just learning from our students and our guests, trust isn't just between me and you. Before, it can be between me and you. You really have to trust yourself.
Yes.
And that goes to your authenticity. If you're authentic, you can find ways to trust yourself, in my opinion, a lot faster. So it's all kind of tied together. It starts with you.
Yes.
For you to put yourself in a position for them to see who you really are.
Yes.
And create that feeling, that oxytocin, that really is that feeling of what trust is, that you really can't put a hand on it. You probably know when it's not there, even more when you know it's there.
That's such a good point. And I think too, the more you trust yourself, the more secure you are, the more confident you are, the less you feel like this is my last opportunity and I have to ask something and I have to get something immediately, right? Mm-hmm. The more you believe in yourself, you're like, oh, you know what? I'll see him again, right? And I never knew if I was actually going to see Urban again, right? But when you believe in one, another mentor of mine, really, because I was actively pursuing board seats at the time, and my first potential opportunity came, and I was like, oh my gosh, and he was very wise in saying, this isn't going to be your first. And it was always a confidence that he had about his own self. Mm-hmm. And I think for so many of us, we don't always have that. And so if we then turn that belief on in ourselves, and you're not desperate to get and to ask and to take, because you know that the right opportunity at the right time with that person will come when it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. And you're not desperate. And then that works out for everybody involved.
Yeah, that's the stress of climbing that first mountain.
Yes.
Right. You feel there's certain things you've got to get to, instead of just letting the process and the work you put in daily to take care of itself.
Exactly.
Greg?
Exactly.
So, we've been talking a lot about authenticity here and social media. We talk about this all the time in how interconnected the world is now with technology and the ability for anyone to lead, because at the click of a button, they have access to an audience that could be millions of people.
Yeah.
How do you use social media so effectively to lead authentically?
Yeah.
And how has that evolved over your career?
I remember having a conversation with an amazing, amazing woman. Her name is Patty Rodriguez, and she used to be on air with Ryan Seacrest, but she also created a fantastic publishing company for children's books in Spanish, mostly because she couldn't find them for her son as a working mom. And I remember sitting with her and having the conversation early on in my tenure at the Sparks. And I was like, I'm not used to being so visible to the public. And this is very new for me. And I was used to being visible in industry, B2B, in my, at conferences, I could do that, right? Mm-hmm, but to the public, that's a whole nother thing.
Right.
And she said, I get that. And so first I felt heard and seen. And she said, but it's our responsibility, her as a Latina, me as a Black woman, like, how do we show what's possible, show the world what's possible? So whenever I get nervous, and believe me, every time I post, I get nervous. I'm like, oh God, okay, ready? Just do it. Just post. I really do. And because I've had instances where there might have been, backlash. There was when I was at the Academy and we launched our inclusion standards, we had a lot of backlash on that. And so it does make you a little nervous. But that being said, I feel like it's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. I've been blessed with the opportunity to build this platform. And so I still think of myself as that little girl from Rancho Cucamonga who was raised by a single mom and who has worked her whole life. And so I think because I stay kind of rooted in that, and I'm still kind of in disbelief of the blessings that have come my way and that I've earned and that I worked my butt off to get, that it allows it to be authentic, because it is. It just really is. It's like, this is me acting like a crazy mom at my son's basketball game, right? This is me having a conversation about leadership. And this is me reminding myself to be unapologetic. Mm-hmm. And however I can inspire others to do so in my journey, then that's what I hope to do. And some of the feedback I get is just so inspiring and reassuring. But I think it's critical, because it is a tool and we have to be very honest about it. Right. And it is business too. Right. So there's this interesting balance. And especially as you're looking at how individuals have their own individual brands, and then when they're working in organizations as well. And I've seen nothing but positivity and added value to the organizations in almost every circumstance, but organizations are still getting used to that as well.
Yeah.
And so you have to determine from the beginning, what is the purpose of this thing, right? And for me, it did evolve. Mm. At first, it was just, you know, friends, family, and Facebook, right?
Right.
Because again, I'm old. That's where it started. Now I'm mostly Instagram and a teeny tiny TikToker and LinkedIn, for sure. Twitter... Twitter needs more love. Speaking of love, I would love for Twitter to just have more love in its space. Yeah. It's always kind of not been a space of love for me. But Instagram I enjoy. And I think it is defining for yourself, okay, what is in each phase, right? In each phase of your career, in each phase of your life, in what is it? What is that message? And for me, it's always been about representation, inclusion, and advocacy, a little bit about my work, a lot about my son. And then some of the stuff I enjoy, fashion and good wine, and adventure, right? So I think that the more authentic you can be with it, with also both as you... as you're producing content as a content creator, but then also as you're ingesting content, you take it all with a grain of salt. You realize that whatever it is that person is presenting to you, first of all, as an audience, I want us all to start being more grateful because that person didn't have to share. And I'm not even talking about myself. I'm just talking about all of those that decide to be vulnerable and put themselves out there and put their journey out there in the hopes that it might help one person.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if it helps that one person, then I think if we just express gratitude in that space, rather than being so quick to criticize or ask for more, right? Because while I am somewhat public socially on social media, I'm a very private person. So how we balance that, because a lot of us whom are, and believe me, my following is teeny, teeny, tiny relative to some other people that may be creating great content out there and other superstars on social media. But that being said, if your purpose is impact and you've impacted one, that's a ripple effect, right? That one little pebble in the ocean, as they always say, creates hopefully a beautiful tsunami somewhere that doesn't hurt anybody.
There's going to be exponential growth.
Let's say a great wave for someone to surf somewhere
there you
else
go.
Instead of a tsunami. Let's put it that way instead. So I think it is, you know, again, the authenticity has to be there and have some fun with it. Don't take yourself too seriously. Yeah. I don't. I'm very silly and clumsy and crazy. And me and my son like to have fun with it. But at the same time, understanding what it is.
That's awesome. We also talk a lot in the class about the role of mentors and also really advisors in your career. And one of our guests who comes in, Heather Brooks Carrots, we got to give her credit for this one. She actually called it her personal board of advisors. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, do you have a personal board of advisors? And again, how has that evolved and changed over the course of your career?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that in my career, it's been interesting because I'll have my board here and then I'll change a career. I'll reinvent myself again. Right. And then you have to then bring in new ones or additional ones, not new ones. Right. You're not replacing. And that crew, my college crew, they're still there and we still talk through life events, major life events and things like that. Then, you know, then there was my tight sports crew. Right. Then there was my tight entertainment crew. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, of course, the advocacy crew and then the finance crew. So it's like you find them. But I will also say that it's gotten smaller and smaller for sure. And because when you continue to I hate saying rise in your career because I feel like everybody are superstars. But as you continue, your scope of influence continues to grow, then it has to get smaller. Mm-hmm. And not everybody can necessarily relate to each piece of it. So you have to bring in different people. I often use the term tormentors because sometimes you have to have mentors that push you so much that it, and again, I don't believe that you have to be uncomfortable to grow, but sometimes people need to push you past what you believe because they see something in you that's so much bigger than what you saw for yourself.
Right.
And I wouldn't be sitting in front of you today if that weren't the case for, you know, Ivy, who brought me in. Right. And, you know, I never thought, I'm not a lawyer. So, you know, how could I share any insight that lawyers, you know, could benefit from. And if I, and we're competitive, right? And by the way, this one flossed is like, oh, I should have brought my 5 championship rings. I was like, okay, I only have one. Sorry. But that being said, you know, we're competitive. So we want to win. Yeah. Whatever we do, we want to win at, right? And if it even means making an impact or leaving a student with something that they could actually utilize, we want to be good at it. Mm-hmm. We want to win. And so I think you have to push, you have to get those people to push you a little bit farther because they see that potential in you that sometimes you don't see in yourself. And so making sure that some of those are in there, because otherwise you'll just be kind of going along and going easy and not really reaching your full potential. Why are we here if you're not doing that?
Yeah. Do you think you have a responsibility as a mentee to the mentor? Do you, are there any, you know, kind of frame that, because people think it's just the mentor giving.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have a Gen Z mentee, you can learn a lot from that mentee. Yeah. Same thing. You have mentors.
Yeah.
You know, how do you look at the role of a mentee and the mentor-mentee relationship?
Yeah. And yeah, I literally have both. And, you know, first as a mentee, I feel like it's my responsibility to make sure that I'm very intentional, that I know exactly what I want out of this particular situation, not in a strategic maniacal way, but in a way that's respectful of their time, right? Because usually the mentors are like, okay, I love sitting here talking with you. I just don't have a lot of time to do it. So how can we make this the most impactful, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm usually really focused on that, but also doing it again, I've nurtured the relationship leading up to that. So when it is time, it's because they would rather desire a more impactful and actionable conversation. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's part of my responsibility. It's also part of my responsibility to always represent them well. Right? Because if they are mentoring me, then I am now an extension of them. They have gone out of their way, and there's mentorship and there's sponsorship. And I've had the blessing of having both. And either one of those, someone has put their name out there on my behalf. And thus I need to make sure that I'm representing them well. So I think that's also a huge part of being a mentee, is making sure that you are living up and doing everything that you said you were going to do. And then paying it forward, mm-hmm. right? And then you become the mentor and your mm-hmm. mentees are doing that as well. Yeah. But then to your point, I learn a ton from my mentees. I mean, I'm constantly here. And then also, to be quite honest, living unapologetically was for me something that I feel like the next generation of folks are doing so beautifully mm-hmm. and so boldly. And I think for, you know, for those of us that are in previous generations, we weren't taught to do that. So we're relearning all the while trying to mentor them. And so it is such a beautiful thing to be able to learn from them, this boldness, this ability to think about no boundaries and that anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think harnessing that beautiful energy and taking in some of that, I think is critical for any mentor, but any leader, period, whether you're in a mentor relationship or not, you should be bringing that in and letting it mm-hmm. reinvigorate you. Yeah. And rethinking what's possible.
Yeah, that's really cool. Let me ask you something, because this always is something I think about. You know, we have an introduction on this podcast for you, and what we're going to do is go over all the great things that you've done and what you've accomplished. When I have the privilege of speaking in front of the group, they always introduce you with all your accomplishments.
Yeah.
But I always say, once the introduction is over, that the reason I have value in front of you today is because of the adversity and the things that you have to overcome that they never talk about in the introduction. So you have to give that out. And I thought, you know, that you've done so many great things, have so many accomplishments, but like all people in your position, there were things you had to overcome. So a two-part question, what did you have to overcome? What kind of adversities can you share with us? And then what are the values that you gained from overcoming that adversity? Because we all, there is always the inevitability of adversity in our winding road to where we are today. So can you share some of that with us?
Yeah. And, you know, I really appreciate the question, because give me somebody that has had adversity over someone who's had the path laid out for them any day of the week, mm-hmm. right? So raised by a single mom, she raised 4 girls on her own. You know, she actually dropped out of high school her senior year because she was pregnant, went back, got her GED. So one of my sisters did go to college, but she didn't finish. I was the first to graduate. But like the process of even understanding, like I remember one of my dearest friends, her mom was a teacher, and she was like, Christine, you should be in honors. And I'm like, what's that? You know what I mean? So I didn't know. So I took the test because my friend told me to take the test. And then that helped me, be able to get into UCLA. So I would say, coming from kind of nothing and then being able to teach myself to figure it out, right? That hustler mentality, let me tell you, it's dangerous because give me any problem. And it becomes a game. In fact, I used to play this game, or I don't know if Irvin knew we were playing a game, but he'd be like, hey, so follow up with the woman that we had the meeting with last week. I'm like, we had 20 meetings last week. Mm. Okay. So I would play a game with myself. That's literally all the information it would give me, right? Follow up with the woman about the thing from the meeting last week. And I would be like, okay, I'm going to figure this out and I'm not going to have to go back and ask another question. And it became like a game for me to be like, figure out how quickly I could get there and how few questions I could ask. So coming from nothing, not having the blueprint, and I wanted to be a doctor because I knew you could be a doctor or a lawyer. And back then I was like, and doctors are rich because they make $100,000. So therefore, and we all know that, things change. But that being said, it was a blueprint. It was a plan. And so therefore I was like, okay, I don't know anything else. I don't know the plan for anything else. But then what was crazy about my career is I didn't get into medical school. And because I didn't get into medical school, I was out organizing and working and doing all that stuff too much that my grades sucked, to be quite honest. And so I didn't get in. And so I had to figure something else out. And then I figured out another job. And then I figured something else out. And then I found my default, what I was great at. So I say all that to say, when you come from nothing, and again, my mom worked her butt off. She had 3 or 4 jobs. Like, we had the basics, but you had to figure all the rest out. And that creates such beautiful innovation that creates new jobs and new products and new technologies, right? Those are the things that when you can overcome that, the creativity is unmatched. Give me any problem. And I also credit my science degree because that's what science is. You're figuring out problems. Mm-hmm. Now I just figure out problems in the business perspective. But literally, you put anything in front of me and I'll figure out how to do it. So adversity got me there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the desire to constantly give back as well. Because while it was challenging for me, I don't believe that it should be that way. And I don't believe it has to be that way. And I believe that you can still succeed and not have to have so much adversity. Right. I think you should still have some challenges that you should have to figure out, because I think we're in another generation now where those of us, like even my son, right? Like, I now have to acknowledge the privilege that my son has that even I didn't have. And that other little Black boys don't have, right? He's in a private school, right? Because I have gotten to where I am. So now we're in this really interesting space where he now won't have the type of adversity that I had. So how do I still instill in him the need to figure things out in solution? And so I also want to make sure that as we look at adversity, yes, it's a good thing because it helps us figure things out. It kind of toughens us up a little bit. For those of us in historically underutilized communities, we need a break from the adversity. We're tired,
yeah.
Right? And so many times, not only have we had to overcome the adversity, but we're also given the challenge. We're not given the pretty diamond that you just need to put in the place setting. We're given that cold, you got to pressure, you got to and you got to make the steamy pile of poo-poo into the diamond, then you put it in the place setting, right? And we're not given those opportunities mm-hmm. as much mm-hmm. as our maybe more affluent or white male counterparts. And we have to acknowledge that, right? And so many of us are in a space where we're like, okay, we did the adversity thing. Like mm-hmm. now it's time for a little softness. You're hearing a lot about a soft year, mm-hmm. right? Because, and especially in entertainment, right? We're trying to see how can my success and how can my joy simply be an act of resistance? Mm-hmm. Because you don't see just Black success and you don't see just Black joy for no apparent reason, right? It's because they had to overcome something, even in entertainment and in the media and what we see. You know, if you see just a very wealthy Black man, you're like, okay, well, what did he do to get that? When you see a wealthy white man, you don't necessarily think that per se, because that's what we've been normalized, mm-hmm. because that's what we've seen in the media. Mm-hmm. So how do we normalize that? Right. And there's a lot of different people working on that. You know, we were working on that when I was at the Academy. I know my dear friends over at Wheels Up were working on that in the private aviation space. So we're really looking to see how do we normalize joy and success in these historically underutilized communities. So that way, now it's like we have that same foundation. Imagine what we could do, right? When we're not starting from here with all these things being thrown at you, imagine. And then how that contributes to the greater humanity of everybody. Yeah.
So what we just did is we unconsciously circled back to your narrative through this concept of adversity. And I was wondering, through your narrative, you've built a value system that's a product of your upbringing, of your narrative.
Yeah.
And I was wondering that when you go into a business or you're leading, what are your non-negotiables, the values that have to be sustained amidst the noise, amidst the adversity, kind of that meandering road to build what you want to build.
Yeah.
You know, what are those values that are at the top of the list?
I'm always about how do you operationalize the good, right? How do you use your powers for good and not evil, right? We've all been blessed with these jobs and these seats and this privilege. And if you're there just collecting a check, none of us, whether you come from a historically underutilized community or not, have the privilege to just sit there and collect a check. Our world is not in a place right now where any of us should feel like we have that privilege. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many of us do, right? But for some of us, and I know for me particularly, I never felt that privilege. Mm-hmm. There always had to be something else. And even if it wasn't at that job, then I would go out and figure out, okay, how do I make people aware of the job? Mm-hmm. Or how do I make the job more impactful over here? Mm-hmm. Or even though that wasn't part, when I first started the Academy, there was no parts of diversity, equity, and inclusion that were in my job description whatsoever. And then eventually it evolved to that. It was strictly operations as the COO, mm-hmm. right? But yet and still, the more you can integrate that into the system,
yeah.
right? It doesn't matter who the person is, but mm-hmm. the system itself has some checks and balances mm-hmm. that are there to make an impact. And so for me, that had always been the through line in all that I did. You know,
tell me this, when we walk into your locker room, mm-hmm. to your office space, where and there's people in it, mm-hmm. what does that look like on a daily basis? What are things that you, the expectations or what I would call the standards that are illustrated within the framework of people working together? What are those things look mm-hmm. like? Can you give us a soundbite
sure.
on that?
The first thing that came to mind immediately was joy. Whether it's joy because you're not taking yourself too seriously, joy because you love the work, joy because you feel blessed to be there, just joy. And every day is not going to be a joyful day. I get that, right? But you have to be intentional when you choose joy. And especially amidst everything that's happening in our world, right? And it doesn't mean that you're naive. It just means that you are choosing the positive. So my locker room consists of optimistic people that see through and are ready to make the impossible possible, right? Don't take themselves too seriously and have respect for all people no matter what, right? So for me, that's when the true impact is made and everybody grows and everybody wins. When you have those that might be more pessimistic, I can have a realist, but I can't have a pessimist, right? In my locker room. I love realism. I'm real. I'm like, all right, that might be impossible, right? But let's give it a try, mm-hmm. right? But don't give me all the reasons why it can't
happen. Right.
Don't give me all the reasons why it never happened before, right? Give me reasons, not no, but how. Mm-hmm. Right? Not now, but when. Mm-hmm. So I need people who are constantly living in abundance and not in fear.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you brought up, I think I want to put a point of emphasis on it because joy is a core value for me.
Yeah.
And I think that if people are listening, their eyes, joy, what is joy? And I think you said it, joy is, I got this from Steve Kerr of the Warriors. He really kind of turned me on to the definition, which is, as you brought up, it's gratitude for having the opportunity to be within the walls of our business.
Yes.
And then there's a selflessness to it. You can't, it's really living in the now. Joy is living in the now. It's living in the moment of being grateful.
Yes.
And being selfless and saying, this is my role.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my job. I'm not going to look around for the next job or for more money. I'm just, because people will recognize my impact if I can stay contained in this this box of joy, which isn't really a box, it's an opportunity to grow and become better. So joy is huge. And I think that's, you know, that is something that I think is really new as I see it from afar, but it's happening in sports now.
Yeah.
And the people we've had in it talk about it, you know, this being in the moment and really enjoying the company and the day-to-day work that we're specifically after the pandemic, where we've kind of come back together.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. And I think it is you have to be so intentional because there's so many people that want to, you know, but what about, okay, that's great, but I'm going to live here. I do want to acknowledge the privilege though, right? Because not everybody has the privilege of finding joy in what they do or the safety to be able to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to acknowledge that. And the more we can create our locker rooms and these new leaders that are coming up are creating those locker rooms and those safe spaces, it'll hopefully be more normal and less of a privilege, but it is a privilege and not everybody gets that privilege. Right. The other thing that I would note is the amazing Miss Val, who was our amazing UCLA gymnastics coach, which is world renowned. She went through crazy cancer and wrote a book. And one of her philosophies is, I get to do something, right? So when those hard things happen, mm-hmm. when you don't want to do whatever it is that you have to do, right? In order to get to the joy, I have reframed it to say, I get to do X, Y, and Z.
Not you have to do it.
Not I have to do it.
The hard part is that Steve Kerr is coaching a bunch of multimillionaires. There's only 12 of them. And so it's easier to get them to say, I'm grateful for being able to play in the NBA, making all this money, being around great people, having all these privileges, and staying in my role, because that's the key part to joy, is that it's appreciation for the role, whether you're the sixth man or the 12th man.
Sure.
You're still part of something the gratitude of being part of something very few people can be a part of.
Yeah.
And it's much harder, I think, in the day-to-day world of business, I would imagine, or a law firm or whatever it might be.
I think you're right. I think that it's the same philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And those gentlemen have their own challenges as well. Right. And so I think that, yes, they have been blessed with being able to. And again, my son and I were just having this conversation, like, Mom, do you think I can make it to the NBA? And I was like, well, you know, I definitely believe you can make it D1. I said, regardless of whatever talent you have, it is very statistically challenging to get to the NBA, just statistically speaking, right?
And those men are so elite hyper,
right? From a very young age,
right?
And so I think first and foremost it is acknowledging that they have worked their entire lives. Like so many of us like have changed careers multiple times, like and didn't, you know, and mine is business solutioning my whole life, but it's been in different realms, right? So I think it is definitely, I would say probably different challenges for them,
right?
But a blessing nonetheless. Yeah. And I'm sure they see it as being grateful to be able to live their dream.
Yep.
So as we kind of close out a few things, we talk about success. And you had mentioned earlier when you were talking about going to medical school, and you know, doctor making $100,000 and money may equate to success for some. How has success, the definition of success, evolved over your career?
That's so funny that you asked that. Like now I'm in this renaissance. You see what I did there? Renaissance. You know, you always have to slide Beyonce in there somewhere. And if you don't, you failed. Okay. So I'm in this renaissance and success has changed for me significantly, right? And it is now freedom. It's freedom. And it is freedom to be with my son. It is freedom to be Christine unapologetically. It is freedom to be able to take stands on things that I feel so passionate about and where I could probably take a little bit of a stand. I could take all the stand that I want now. Now, you know, you still have to pay the bills and I'm a single mom. So, you know, how I continue to make sure that he's taken care of and I keep all the lights on at home, you know, you have to look at, you know, what that looks like. That being said, I'm staying in freedom and I'm staying in what's inspiring to me. I just had a conversation with somebody the other day and it was yesterday. And so we were talking about filmmaking, right? So I've had the honor of participating as a co-producer in a couple documentaries. And that's why I have to fly out tomorrow. But, and this one is telling the stories of Black women doctors during COVID and how challenging their journey has been. And the name of the documentary is I'm Not Your Hero. And I sit on the advisory board of a nonprofit organization that has done vaccines and testing throughout underserved communities throughout the pandemic. And so it's kind of documenting their work and what the struggle has been for those Black female doctors trying to be heroes in all places, and the toll that it's taken on their mental health, and how many of them, unfortunately, we've lost. And so when you stay rooted in the story, right, in the cause, in the impact, what I have found, and again, I got to this place and I have privilege to be in this place, is that then the opportunity, the money that comes. And I know it sounds cliche and I know people say that all the time, but what happens is when you shift your perspective, you move out all the noise, you move out the negative thoughts, you move out the toxicity and the stuff that has been blocking all of these other potential opportunities that have will come your way that could be lucrative. And that's the space I'm in. Mm-hmm. So don't get me wrong, a goal that we don't get to say a lot, and by we, I mean, especially Black women, don't get to say, my goal is to create generational wealth for my family, period, mm-hmm. end of story. And I'm going to be unapologetic about that, mm-hmm. but I'm also going to do it while I want to do it for other people too. And I want to do it for everyone around me. And so I'm rooted in that too. So freedom, because that gives me the ability to be with my son as much as possible. The storytelling, the art, the love, the joy, whatever it is, the business solutions, the consulting that I'm doing, that over there. And then creating that generational wealth and impact both for myself and everybody that I come into contact with.
That's awesome. At the end of your career, what do you want others to say about your leadership? Your leadership style, you as a leader?
Just that, you know, she helped me get here faster. She helped me get here easier. You know, not but for, because I think that, you know, we all can figure things out on our own, but that if I made it easier for someone else, I made them feel seen, and helped them find their purpose, then to me, that would be a win.
We're going to finish up here. Greg loves the quick hitters. I've missed them a couple times with our guests. I'm not going to miss them today. Okay. So I got a two-parter is the first one, and then two others. Okay. So what are you reading right now?
So I'm one of those horrible people. I'm going to be completely honest. I have about 5 books that I've started sitting around my house. That being said,
Jamel, do you have the book or the
book? Okay. The actual books. Yeah. I like to touch the pages. I like to take notes.
Tells us a lot about people.
Yes. So we have to ask that. Yes. The Book of Awakening, and it's some daily, kind of just, life lessons, if you will. Jamel Hill's, memoir as well. And, cause she's a dear friend. And then the, Black Five is a story about, how basketball was started. So cool. A project that I'm working on. So
last book you read, last book, the one you finished.
Oh, good Lord. I told you I've started 5 of them. Yeah, no,
I'll leave it at that.
It's been a minute.
Okay. Favorite sport to watch?
Basketball.
Okay. And we're going to finish the last one with Greg's favorite, your favorite restaurant anywhere in the
country. Of course it is. Steak 48 in Chicago. Okay. Their rib cap is amazing and their wine list is phenomenal.
Which one? What?
Steak 48.
Steak 48. Mm-hmm. Where's that located?
At Chicago. That's
all I got. All right, we'll leave it at that. Right, I was there just curious. Yeah. I spent a little time there, so I thought I'd at least add. Yeah, of course, great. I never got anywhere up from my house to the building. That was it.
I know. And not during winter, that's for sure. Yeah.
So, Christine Simmons, thanks for joining us today. This was awesome. We learned a lot. And hopefully we'll use this podcast to share with our community and give something back as we get it out there. Thank you
for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks go out to our executive producer, Greg Levy, associate dean and director of the Entertainment, Arts, and Sports Law Program at the University of Miami School of Law. I want to also thank our engineer and editor, Christopher Elzadi. Our theme music from Calyptra. And special acknowledgement to our research assistant, Nick Rossi, a fellow attorney and student who's done a great job in our preparation.